This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform for creating a blog, website, portfolio, or an online store. To create your own space, visit squarespace.com and save 10% by using offer code TREK12. And by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Plus, if you'd like to support our programming personally, visit trek.fm/donate to get our alien badges and art prints featuring original illustration by Tobu Ushi.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 124, A License to F with Time. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me this week is Charlene Schmidt. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including new Voyager fine art prints, 8-bit exploration with Star Trek Trexels, and LeVar Burton's support for AIDS research. Plus, we get an update on Larry Nemechek's Trekland Trunk and preview Wolf in the Fold and The Trouble with Tribbles from 5-Year Missions Year 3. Then in the feature, we're joined by Tristan Riddell and John Mills to discuss the Voyager episode, Relativity. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Char. It's good to have you back with me once again on the Ready Room to co-host. And, you know, we were having an interesting discussion just before the show here. Apparently, we're in contract negotiations with your cat to become a co-host on the network.
Yes. He's very excited about this, as am I, because I have to shut him out when we podcast. Now he won't have to when we discuss the animated series in upcoming episodes. Teddy is going to chime in on Maress.
Right. He's actually going to be playing the role of Maress on the show, I believe. That's what he's demanding anyway.
Yeah, well, and I think it's absolutely fitting. I mean, he's always trying to make a cameo on the podcast by hollering by the door. And I think this is going to help that problem a little bit. Let him chime in, say his piece, and then he can back off when it's just me.
Yeah, it sounds good. And some people listening might be thinking that, you know, Teddy is a boy cat, that he can't play the role of Maress on the show. But don't forget, it worked for Spite, so... You know, spontaneous
no
feline sex changes in Star Trek are nothing new.
This will not be a problem at all. No.
No, not at all. All right. So how's everything going, Char?
Things are good. It's nice to be back co-hosting the Ready Room with you. And it's very cold in good old Fargo. Winter has finally hit. We turn the corner into negative temperatures. Yay!
Wow. So when are you guys going to climb into your Breen refrigeration suits?
We already did. That was last week.
Actually, you know, if it's getting colder, maybe you could take them off.
maybe I'm doing it wrong.
Yeah, you're doing it backwards, I think. Yeah. Wear them in the summer.
Well, I forget every year how to do this. Sort of like how people forget how to drive in the snow.
Oh, yeah.
You should know these things, but you forget every year.
If you're a Breen, wear the suit in the summer, you go shotgun in the winter, if you live in Fargo.
Okay. That explains why I've seen some people wearing shorts when it's, you know, maybe 5 degrees.
Right. Perfect.
They're Breen. I gotcha.
All right. Well, let's move away from the Breen and Deep Space Nine and hop into some Voyager. This is going to be a Voyager show this week. We're going to talk about relativity in the future. And so to kick things off, Char, and since you were co-hosting... I pulled out this story here about Generation Gallery honoring the 18th anniversary of Voyager, which, believe it or not, is coming up next month in January.
I know, weird. 18? Really? Oy.
Voyager premiered on January 16th, 1995, and I remember it very well, actually.
Long time ago, and yet feels like yesterday.
Yeah. Well, especially if you've been jumping back and forth through time, like Captain Braxton and Seven.
Oh, yeah, that's just it. I'm really nauseous from all this. Oh.
But what Generation Gallery is doing is they have a set of three fine art prints honoring Voyager. They've got Seven, Janeway, and the ship itself. What do you think about these? Would you hang these up there in your room?
Well, I do have a shrine behind me in my office here full of Star Trek memorabilia, and surprisingly to a lot of people, I'm sure, would be maybe the lack of Voyager memorabilia. I have my photo and autograph with Kate Mulgrew and also with Garrett Wong, and that is really about it right now. However, I don't know, I took a look at these things, and they're okay, but you know what? As a designer, I feel like I could go into Photoshop and make something really similar and do it on the cheap.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. You know, there have been a lot of really fantastic fine art prints that have been coming out over the past year or two. And when I clicked on these to see the larger versions of the images, I was a little bit surprised because I almost feel like they're photos. So in a sense, that's great. I mean, they've done some fantastic photorealistic work here. At the same time, I think they're too much like photos for me, that if I'm going to get art prints, I want something that's a little more stylized, has a little bit more of the personality of the artist in it.
Yeah, I think it feels a little too plain for me. Like, I see these kind of photos on Tumblr all the time, and maybe in person they look really sharp.
Could be.
Especially right. Voyager. But as for Seven and Janeway, there's not a whole lot going on. I mean, Seven's in her cat suit, posing pretty. Janeway's holding a compression phaser rifle. I don't know. I feel like they could have done just a little bit more and made it unique.
Well, I think at least with Janeway and this rifle here, she really should have bulging biceps, don't you think?
Yeah, and she should be stripped down to the tank top and be like, she'll have the rifle in one hand and coffee in the other. That's how they should have done this, and I would buy that.
Oh, yeah, a little macrocosm going there. So, yeah, I'm personally not a big fan of these myself. It's beautiful work by the artist, but it doesn't really catch my attention. You know, it's tough, though. Like you said, in person, these things could come off completely differently and be amazing, and you really want to buy them. And it's the trouble with the internet, I think, because we see this with other people who do fine art prints, that you can't put super large images online because people will just steal them and then they'll be out all over the place. At the same time, something like this needs to be seen at actual size for you to really appreciate the artwork. I think what I'd like to see is close-ups of them, just little patches where you can see the texture of the paper.
Where you could see the detail of the work.
Yeah.
Now, that might be a difference maker.
And maybe that'll come out shortly. Maybe it's just not there, because this is kind of a first look thing that we're getting here. They are available now, though. They became available from December 10th. They are produced on 300-gram textured fine art paper. So that's what we're saying here, that maybe seeing the actual thing, or at least seeing the up-close texture, will make a big difference. They're hand-numbered, limited to 995 sets worldwide. They include a certificate of authenticity as well. Just $40 per set. So it's a really good price, really great price, actually, for three fine art prints. Yeah. And they're shipping from the UK, but it's free shipping.
Yeah, I mean, really, all in all, that's not a bad deal at all. If you just want some Voyager art, this is a pretty decent way to do it, and not for tons and tons of money, because when you do go for the really complex stuff, you can shell out hundreds, thousands of dollars for memorabilia. Easy.
Yeah. So if you're interested, though, check it out. We'll put a link in the show notes. You can find more information over on StarTrek.com as well, and see what you think about them. Like we said, not necessarily our cup of tea, but it is beautiful work by the artist. And so for a lot of fans, it might be just what you're looking for. So you can go check that out.
Yeah, some people might really dig them. But you know what I'm digging on, Chris, this week in our news, is the next bit that we're going to talk about. And this is Star Trek Trexels.
Yes.
Helps you explore the 8-bit galaxy. Oh, this takes me back. The original Nintendo days when we had nothing else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I had the original Nintendo Entertainment System. Before that, I had the Atari 2600 and all that stuff. But
as did I, yeah.
I remember getting my first NES, and the reason I got it was to play Super Mario Brothers. Because at the time, it was amazing. It's like, wow,
oh, yeah.
This looks almost like the arcade machine. And
yeah,
when we
look
at it now, and we look at the Star Trek Trexels game here, and it's the same 8-bit graphics, and it looks so antiquated and so boxy.
Yeah.
Based on what we're accustomed to now. But at the same time, you know, there's a resurgence of this 8-bit gaming, which I love because what I grew
up
with. Yeah,
retro is cool.
Retro is cool, and I love, you know, there are quite a few 8-bit style games that you can get on iPad now, a lot of adventure games especially. And it's wonderful that they're doing this. Do you remember, Char, the artist John Martz did a limited edition print that was published by Koyama Press that featured 235 characters from Star Trek as 8-bit pixel art. Have you seen this poster before?
I have seen it, and it is amazing. Now, that is a piece of art that I want.
Oh, definitely. And those are, he called them Trexels. And so this is Star Trek Trexels, the video game that's from Yes Gnome and XCube Games for iPhone, iPad, and iPod Touch. And of course, the moment I saw this story on StarTrek.com, I went to the App Store, I typed in the name, and I downloaded it, and I have it on my iPad now, and I've been playing it a little bit. And
all right.
It's a great little nostalgic romp in gaming, and the fact that it's Star Trek makes it all the better.
So is it fun? Have you enjoyed playing it?
I have. You know, I haven't gotten too far into it because I just got it yesterday, so I haven't had time to play it too much, but I've really been enjoying it so far. It's narrated by George Takei, so the whole setup, you have George Takei telling you the story of what happened about the ship, the USS Valiant, that has been destroyed by an unknown attacker. And then you have been chosen by Starfleet to take command of the USS Trexel Prize. And you get to select your crew, and you get to choose your captain, and you're going to get set to go out on the mission. Now, for me, when you choose your captain, it's one of the first things that you have to do in the game. And they give you a list of possible characters who can be your captain. Now, I chose X Adamo as my captain because it was the closest name to Adama. And because this game mixes elements from the original series and the Next Generation, I felt, you know, all this has happened before, and it's all going to happen again. And so I had to have a captain that had a name like Adamo.
So say we all!
All right. Fair enough. It sounds interesting. I'm going to have to check this out.
The characters are just really cool there. You've got guys that look a lot like Riker. You've got the beard going.
Nice.
It's interesting to have a mix, though, because a lot of it is TOS in flavor, and they have music from the original series, yet the interface is the Elcar's interface from the Next Generation.
Yeah. I noticed that when I watched the trailer, and I wasn't really sure where they were going with that, but if it's a pretty fluent mix all the way through, all right, so be it.
Well, it's explained right up front that because of what is happening with space and time, the generations have become mixed. And so there are elements, characters, there are aliens, there's technology from both TOS and TNG eras here. So it is explained, yeah.
All right, cool.
The senior game designer at Yes Gnome, Craig Boland, said, "We were really inspired by the spirit of the original series, especially the sense of exploration and adventure. Our goal was not only to give players the opportunity to build and customize their own ships, but the chance to journey through an entire galaxy's worth of strange new worlds and civilizations." And from what I've seen so far, I think they captured that pretty well.
All right. It sounds like fun.
Do you play any of these games like Heyday or Farmville or Minecraft or any of these types of things?
I cannot say that I do. I know people get really super addicted to them. And for that reason alone, I kind of shy away because I just don't have time to devote to something like that. I mean, you get sucked in. My mom was a Farmville addict for a long time. I don't know if she is now.
Oh, really?
But yeah. She spent a lot of time on that thing, and she was managing friends' farms. I mean, it got ridiculous. And I don't know. I don't have 5 hours a day to devote to gaming anymore. It's kind of sad. Yeah. Like when we were mentioning the NES, oh, man, I would play Mario all day. But I was also 8, so things are a little different now. I have to keep my job and I you know, responsibility, being an adult, allegedly, and whatever. Anyway.
Well, you just need to get a job at a game company, Char.
Maybe that's next on my goal list. We'll see.
Maybe so, yeah. Well, this came along for me at exactly the right time, because I've actually been looking for a game sort of like this to play. But I keep going through the App Store and I keep looking at things and I think, oh, it looks kind of cool, but you know, I don't know if I'll play it. I really don't have the time and I'm not sure if I can get into it. And so this one coming along being Star Trek, it's like, okay, well, I'm sure I can get into this because I just have to find out where they're going with this. And so for me, this is going to be, you know, earlier in the year, it was Star Trek Rivals. And I haven't been playing Rivals as much for quite a while now. Actually, I haven't been playing it at all for a while now. And so I think Trexels is going to be my next gaming addiction. So we'll see how it goes.
Nice.
But we'll put a link in the show notes to this as well. And as Char mentioned, there's a video that you can go watch over there on the Yes Gnome website if you want to see what the game's like, you know, in action, since in the App Store all you can see are the still shots of it. But it's quite cool. Well, Char, this next story is something I was really happy to see, because one thing that I love is when actors anywhere, but especially in Star Trek, they become very well known, often because of Star Trek, not always exclusively because of Star Trek, but Star Trek carries a certain weight because it's loved worldwide by so many people. The actors, they have the ability later on in their careers to really get involved in important causes and to put their name value behind it as well as their financial resources behind it and really help to make a difference in the world. And as we know from reading Rainbow going way, way back, very few people are as involved in trying to make the world a better place than LeVar Burton. And LeVar has teamed up with WeCare.com for a new contest to help benefit research for a cure for HIV and AIDS.
Yeah, this is really cool, and who better than LeVar Burton? For one thing, reading Rainbow is a completely awesome body of work in and of itself, not to even mention Star Trek. I mean, he's known just for that, but he is always, I always hear about LeVar Burton going out, championing some kind of a cause, and doing good with it. He's really out there, he's very present with that, really does care, and that's fantastic, and there is something in it for us, too. If we want to support this cause, you can win lunch with LeVar Burton.
Yeah, that's really cool to be able to do that. And it's very easy to enter the contest as well. The contest, first of all, it's going on now. It's running through January 9th. So you've got you know, a few weeks left that you can still enter if you want to get in on this. But all you need to do is go to the WeCare.com website. In fact, it's ara.we-care.com/get-started. That's the actual landing page, but we'll put a link to that in the Enhanced podcast here and in the show notes. But you go over there and you create an account. And what this account does is it unlocks donations every time you shop at more than 2,500 online merchants. And there's no extra cost involved to you at all, but by having the account, you're going to get these great offers all across the web. And also, by creating the account, you are automatically entered into this Lunch with LeVar Burton contest.
Yeah, I think this is really cool. And when you put this into the show notes, I signed up right away because it's holiday time here. And I like to do a lot of online shopping as much as I can, in fact, so I can avoid the stores. And so, why not?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a great cause. It's a wonderful thing that WeCare.com is doing. Wonderful for LeVar Burton to be involved. You know, LeVar, one of his causes is the AIDS Research Alliance. And it's just with his backing, you know, this is the thing with, you know, I grew up in the 80s, and when HIV and AIDS was becoming kind of an epidemic and we weren't able to control the disease. And, you know, I mean, I remember when it was a death sentence, basically, if you found out you had HIV, if you had AIDS, that was kind of like, that was it. And of course, now we're able to control this disease fairly well with drugs, and people can contract it and still live out normal lives, fairly normal lives. But it's one of those diseases where, you know, I really do think that we will solve this puzzle and we will find a cure for this. And so, you know, please go sign up at WeCare.com and support what they're doing and support what LeVar's doing, whether or not you win the lunch with LeVar. I mean, that's icing on the cake, but it's just it's a great cause to help make the world better.
Is.
So I'm glad to see that you're doing this.
Yeah. And I do think it's good to keep AIDS research in the spotlight. Like you said, we can control it, but it's not gone. And I think our attention span is so short as a society. Like, we don't even think about this anymore. Like, in the 80s, it was an epidemic, but now I don't know if anybody really thinks about this very often. So it's good to bring it back to our attention and remind us all that, yes, this is still out there, and yes, we still have work to do.
That's exactly, it's a great point, because that's the thing, because we can control it, people kind of feel like, okay, that's been solved. Let's go on to something else now, but it hasn't been solved. You know, we have to find an actual cure for it. It's the same with, you know, there are a lot of diseases that people think are gone. Well, they're not gone, but people start avoiding vaccinations. Well, that's when they resurface. Yeah. You know, so you have to be vigilant about this stuff. So we will put a link in the show notes to this as well. As I mentioned in the Enhanced podcast here, also right over to the WeCare.com website where you can sign up and get your account, get entered in the contest, and also be able to take advantage of all of those discounts at over 2,500 online merchants. And again, it's through January 9th. So go ahead and take care of that now if you want to get in on that. All right, Char, let's take a break from news for a moment and tell everyone about the first sponsor for today's show, and that is Audible.com. As I've mentioned on a lot of shows recently, Audible is kind of like, it was kind of like my savior for many years. I've been a member of Audible for 14 years, which is very, very hard for me to believe, and it makes me feel really old. But, you know, Audible, with their audiobooks, they really helped me keep my sanity during all those years where I had to commute 4.5 hours round trip here in Tokyo to get to work and back, because they just have so much great content on there. They have classics, of course, and they have current bestsellers. You know, most books these days, most new books come out with an audio version, especially, you know, anything that's going to come out in hardcover, especially usually has an audio version, and you can grab that over there. But they have a lot of great Star Trek books as well. And what we're doing each week is recommending a Star Trek book to everyone. And the book I'd like to recommend today, as this is a Voyager show, is Jerry Taylor's Mosaic. And Char, I'm gonna pass the ball over to you right now and let you tell everyone about Mosaic, because I know that you and Tristan both are big fans of both Mosaic and Pathways.
Indeed. Yeah, Jerry Taylor wrote both of those books, and they go into the backstory of the Voyager characters. Mosaic focuses on Janeway. Pathways goes to everybody else. And so if you want to know Jerry Taylor's take on who Catherine Janeway was and why she eventually chose command, even though she started out in science, so many things, all that happened to her, this is the book that you want. This is the book that's going to tell you. And I kind of consider it semi-canon just because it is written by Jerry Taylor. I mean, some of the things in this book do get put into the show later on.
Yeah.
So there
I consider it canon because Jerry Taylor wrote it, personally. Yeah, I've always considered those two books to be
canon.
It's
as close as you're going to get. Yeah. And even better, the audio version is narrated by Kate Mulgrew. And so you got to get this book. It is fantastic. I've had this book on audio for a very long time, as well as the hardcover, because I'm obsessed. But it's a fantastic book. And if you have not read it, this is a great chance to check it out. Kate Mulgrew will read it to you. What more do you people want? Go, 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 go now. How about that for a sales pitch?
I agree with you. I had Mosaic and Pathways both as hardcovers, and I've misplaced them over the years with all my moves, because I of course, got them at the time they came out when they were brand new in hardcover. But very good books. I need to get around to rereading them at some point. And you mentioned Kate Mulgrew narrating this. It's like for me when I tell people, if you've never read, and you can get these on Audible as well, if you've never read William Shatner's Star Trek Memories and Star Trek Movie Memories,
yeah.
A, you need to, but B,
yes.
Don't bother getting the book on those. Go to Audible and get the audio versions, because Star Trek Memories and Star Trek Movie Memories are both unabridged on Audible, and they're read by William Shatner. And the fact that William Shatner himself is telling you all this stuff makes it so much better than the printed page could possibly be.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you get his take on his own words. So that's fantastic. And I feel like Kate Mulgrew gives a similar spirit to Janeway.
Well, she is Janeway. So, you know,
right.
I don't want someone else telling
she would
me
know, right?
about how Janeway got on the command track. I want Kate Mulgrew telling me that. So absolutely.
Absolutely. Yes.
Well, as a Trek FM listener, we have a deal for you. You can get a free audiobook of your choice just by trying Audible. So you can go and get Mosaic. Or if you're not a Voyager fan and you want, you're a TOS fan, you can get Star Trek Memories and Star Trek Movie Memories as your free book. Choose one of those as your free book. And the way you do that is just by going to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up. And that's all there is to it. So you just choose the audiobook you want and you're good to go. So you support us. Yeah. It helps us bring the Ready Room to you every week. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and get the book. And we really thank Audible for their support of the Ready Room and the network. All right, Char, let's move on. We have a couple more things today. And the next thing is our weekly preview of 5-Year Missions Year 3. Now, when we started doing this, of course, it truly was a preview because the album wasn't out yet. The album is available now, so you can go right now as you're listening to this and pick it up. But we do want to finish bringing everyone all the tracks that are on the album. So we have 4 to go. We're going to do 2 today. We'll do 2 next week to close out the year. And today we're going to talk about Wolf in the Fold and The Trouble with Tribbles. So let's play a clip of Wolf in the Fold, and then I want you to tell me what you think about it.
To this song was, oh boy, it's a country song. Goody. Because I'm not much of a country fan. I'm sorry, it's just not my cup of tea. I don't like it. But if I'm going to listen to a country song, it's going to be this one, because Wolf in the Fold is the perfect episode for a country song. 5-Year Mission proved it to me. And they did such a phenomenal job of writing this song that I fell in love. I absolutely adore it.
Well, the spirit of it, yeah, it is kind of like a country song. It kind of reminds me, at least with the fact that everyone's kind of rambunctious, you know, kind of having, there's a party going on. Kind of reminds me of like an old Hank Williams Jr. kind of situation. But there's something, so that is a great setup for what happens at the beginning of the episode. But there's something else about this track that I think is just really, really brilliant. Did you notice anything about this? You know, usually they're songs, they take you through the episode, they tell you the story of the episode. Did you notice anything about this one?
A little bit, yeah. At the very ending, boom, the reveal, and it's quite abrupt. And you're like, oh, that's it? Oh my gosh!
That's it, because
yes,
this
that
song...
Yes, that did take me back.
This song takes place entirely in the teaser before the credits. The whole thing ends with... Scotty killed a hooker. and you're done.
Yeah.
He's right there against the wall.
Yeah.
With the night,
oh,
and that's, yeah, that's the end of the song.
I was waiting for the next verse, you know, with this being a country song where, you know, poor Scotty, his dog died, and he's going to become an alcoholic, his tractor broke down. I mean, this is just going to get worse and worse, right? Nope. Stop.
Combine it with the Naked Time, they can go back in time 3 days and undo all of that.
Hey. That could be cool.
But when we had the guys on the Ready Room a few weeks ago, when we did the feature on the album, Mike was talking about that next he wants to write a sequel to it where he actually tells the story of the rest of the episode.
Oh, okay. So there will be a sequel. Cool.
I don't think there will be, but that, I think it's clever that the whole song is in the teaser. All right. Well,
yeah, actually, I do like this. Yeah. But if they do a sequel, I'm game.
Maybe we need a Wolf in the Fold EP. That would work.
I don't know if we need to go that far. It's pretty hard to top tribbles.
Yeah, well, speaking of EPs and tribbles, the next song we're going to preview here, and many people may have already heard this, but this is The Trouble with Tribbles. So, Char, of course, this was the track that was chosen as the winner of the tracks. There were six different versions of the tribbles on the EP. And one of them, track number four, which is actually probably my favorite track off the EP, there's also an explicit version of it on the album. So you get the regular version and then you get the explicit version. But this is the song that was written by Chris Spurgeon, and it's the one that was chosen to go on the Year 3 album itself. What do you think about the version that's on here?
I like it. It feels like a classic Five-Year Mission to me. Kind of has almost like a Green Day alterna rock flavor to it. Yeah, I dig it. It's great.
It's fun.
How about you?
And that's what I picture the tribbles. You can view them as a menace, right? Like the Klingons would.
Of course,
and they even
yes.
say in the song that only the Klingons, you know, will have a problem with this. I picture like a room full of tribbles and they're all bouncing up and down and going,
oh my gosh,
we're
me
no trouble.
Da, 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 da.
We're tribbles. We'll be no trouble.
We're tribbles. They were bouncing around in my head. Yeah. Absolutely. That's the visual it gives you for sure.
I was picturing like little eyes on them. Like, do you remember the, well, Pet Rocks for one that had the little,
oh my
little
gosh.
Eyes on them? Or those pencils
oh,
that you used to.
That's just weird.
Used to spin the pencils and the hair would fly up in the air and they have the little eyes
yeah.
on them. I'm picturing a room
those.
Full of tribbles and they've all got those little eyes and then they're dancing
oh,
back
God.
And forth.
Oh, tribbles with little beady eyes. That's just creepy. No thanks.
But it'd be fun if it were set to this tune. That's what I'm saying.
Maybe animated tribbles with eyes. I could deal with that. Give them more of a cartoonish look. And then they could be bouncing around with sound effects. Brung, 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 brung. I could be okay with that.
Well, remember, some animated tribbles are pink and giant.
That's true. Wait a minute. I got to rethink this now.
All right. Well, I like this one. I mean, if you haven't heard, we're talking about your three here, but if you haven't heard the Tribble EP yet, go listen to the Tribble EP because great fun on that album. And I'm looking forward to, they're doing a Spock's Brain EP before we get
wait.
Year four. So I'm really excited about that. But as I said, I think track four, which is kind of like a Beastie Boys take on tribbles,
yeah.
I think that's my favorite one on the EP itself.
I think it's my favorite too. It's just, I don't know, it stands out somehow. It's almost, I don't know, I wanted to say outrageous, but it's really not. It's just, it's kind of in your face though.
It's in your face, yeah. Yeah, which I really like.
Yeah, I like that.
From the guys. All right, so those are two more tracks. We have two more tracks that we'll do next week, and that'll be the whole album. And again, you can go over to 5yearmission.net and get the album there. It's also in iTunes, on Amazon, I believe. I saw it today on RDO. I believe it's also on Spotify. So there are lots of places where you can hear it. Now, if you do use RDO or Spotify or one of these subscription streaming services and you like the album, I really do encourage you to go over and actually buy a copy of it from the guys, though, just to support what they're doing and help them bring us your four along the way. So I can't wait for year four. And unfortunately, I think it's going to be 2 years. We're going to get the Spock's Brain EP in the middle.
Yeah. Well, that'll tide us over.
It'll tide us over. All right. Well, let's move on. We have one more item in news today. And Ashar, it looks like this is something here from our friend Larry Nemechek.
Yeah, we love Larry here at Trek FM. And he is putting some pretty interesting items up for sale.
Yeah, this is stuff now, you know, I've seen Larry, all the stuff he has on his shelves in his studio, and it's just a literal treasure trove of Star Trek. I want to say memorabilia, but it's not exactly memorabilia. It's actually stuff from the studio from when the show was being shot, you know, writer's guides.
Archive.
Yeah, scripts, original scripts, different drafts of scripts, acoustograms that were actually used on screen, all kinds of just amazing stuff that he has in there. And you know, Larry is, he's really more interested in the content of these things as opposed to the actual physical items for any sort of sentimental purposes. And since things can be digitized now and the information can be moved into the computer, he wants to open some of this stuff up to the fans so fans can have a possession of all these amazing items from the past. And to do this, he has a Facebook page. It's called Trekland Trunk. We've talked about it here on the show before. I think actually Larry was on with me when we introduced it. That's the episode when Larry was co-hosting news with me a while back. And the actual sales themselves are running through eBay, so you can bid on this stuff. But what Larry's doing is he's just putting stuff up on this Facebook page to let people know it's available. And then you can go and you can bid on it, and then whoever gets it can make the purchase. But it's not like an in-your-face thing where he's like sending you all kinds of marketing stuff about it. It's just, hey, if you're interested, I have this available. And then there's a limited time period. And so some of the things that we're going to mention right here are no longer available. Some of them are. And by the time you listen to this, again, we don't know what will be available or not. But he's putting new stuff out like this all the time. So you want to keep tabs on the Trekland Trunk page and find out what he's got up there. And one thing that he had up there is an original paste-up acoustogram of the Enterprise B that was used for, it was a camera shot backlit plastic panel from Star Trek Generations. And not only is it original, it's also one of a kind. And it has a rare peek at the ship's deck cross-section and all the ship's areas listed by deck.
Oh, we have some comrades who would just go gaga over this. Few people who were really into ships and design. I'm looking at you, Matt Rushing and Daniel Prue.
And Philip Gilfus. Absolutely. Now, if they do, Matthew will jump on anything from the Undiscovered Country. So if they've got, you know, like an acoustogram of the Enterprise A, the variation that was used in Undiscovered Country, I think he'll jump on that for sure.
Yeah, you might as well give up on that. That's his.
Now, since this is a Voyager show today, he also had something on there recently, Char from Voyager.
Yes, and I was really sad that I did not win this, actually, because I was half-heartedly keeping tabs on it. I ended up missing the deadline to put in a bid, but I really wanted this first draft script from the pilot, Caretaker, and apparently there's some things that are a little bit different in it, and now I'm never gonna know, because it's ended and it went for like $56.
Yeah. These different draft scripts are really cool to me because I like to see the creative process and what the writers are thinking as they go along. And some of the photos Larry had up of the original first draft script for Caretaker shows a point in the script where they're talking about shooting, or they're talking about what's happening in the Gazon encampment. not the yes. Kazon encampment.
I love this. We talked about this way back on To the Journey. Yeah, before they were the Kazon, they were the Gazon. And mm-hmm. we kind of made fun of them. We called them the Gazon because they were kind of French.
And, the Gazon, yeah.
Yeah, it's funner to say, actually, than Kazon. I like Gazon.
I like that. They're the Gazon. And instead yeah, Gazon. Of water from Voyager, they want sparkling water.
Mineral water, yeah. Yes. They're a little more civilized than the Kazon actually ended up being.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so those kind of little things are really cool to me. You know, how character names change at the last minute sometimes, and species names,
yeah, and
just all the different variations that go. Because often, you know, they're like rewriting these scripts while they're shooting sometimes.
So, right, very cool. Yeah. As fans, we don't know this, but as a creative... Yeah, you're working up until the very last minute till you have to push it out, you know.
Yeah.
You have no choice, really. You're doing that till the very, very end.
But Larry has stuff for whatever series you're a fan of, especially the modern series, you're going to find stuff because Larry was there. He was around the studio. He was interviewing everybody. He was getting his hands on the scripts, you know, to be able to be in the know of what was going on the shows. So for Niners, there is... the second and last original studio run early draft of Emissary. And for TNG fans, this is really cool. Third season 1989 original studio printed writer's guide for the Next Generation. So this is an internal document, writer's guide. And there were less than 100 of these printed, and most of them, because it was an internal document that they were just using, you know, day to day to produce the show, most of them were just tossed at the end of the season. So there are very, very few of these things floating around.
Yeah, that is cool.
So keep tabs on it. The Trekland Trunk with hyphens in between there over on Facebook. We will put a link to it in the show notes, or you can go over to Larry's website, LarryNemechek.com, and you can find your way over to it. There, but like I said, you'd have to see it. Larry has just boxes and boxes from floor to ceiling on shelves in his studio, amazing amount of stuff, and he's going to continue to be putting new stuff out there. So go check it out. Really great.
Definitely.
Okay, Char, well, that's all we have in news today, but before we jump into the feature and talk about relativity, which is going to make everyone's head spin as we hop back and forth through time. Let's tell everyone about something that won't make your head spin, and that's Squarespace, because Squarespace is so easy to use. There's nothing confusing at all about Squarespace. You just log in with your browser. It's combined hosting and CMS. It makes it really simple for you to create your own blog, website, portfolio, or an online store with no knowledge of HTML coding. All you need is your web browser, and you're going to have a beautiful, beautiful website.
Yeah, I think in contrast to the episode we're going to talk about in the feature, Squarespace is simplicity. It is a good thing. Yeah, you don't have to know a lick of HTML. You can still have a beautiful website because they are very geared toward design. You're going to have a beautiful look no matter what you're doing, whether you have a business and you want to sell things or if you have a portfolio you want to showcase. It's going to look good no matter what. They have templates. You can just roll with them, or if you are an HTML junkie, as we are, Chris, you can go in and customize the whole thing if you want. So it's really available for anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are two ways you can customize. Well, actually, there are three ways you can customize. You can start with any template, and then there's down in the bottom right-hand corner of the screen, you have a little tool palette where you click to manage your content. If you want to write, one to manage styles as well. And of course, one to just view it as anyone would view it if they're just looking at the site. And when you click through to the styles, you can do things like changing colors, changing typefaces, changing font sizes, changing, you know, space between elements, whether you have a sidebar or you don't, whether your social icons are square or round or all these different things. And it depends on the template, you know, which features are there. But you control these just by typing in numbers or dragging sliders back and forth. That's all you have to do. And you're done.
Simple.
Now, if you're like me and you want a little bit more control, but you don't want to hand code everything, you can also write custom CSS. So if you know how to write CSS, You can just click custom CSS. You'll get a little pop-up for that. And you can type your own CSS in there to override the values of the template. And you can make changes that that go beyond what you can do with the sliders. But all you're doing is writing simple CSS there. So you're still primarily staying within that nice, neat, clean environment where you don't have to worry about what's going on in the back end. And if you're a developer and you want complete control over absolutely every line of code, they have a developer platform as well that lets you use the power of Squarespace, but to really be coding the website yourself, tying into the features of Squarespace, and you really have total control. So no matter what level you are, you can do absolutely what you want to do using Squarespace.
Right. And once you get all this going, you're going to want to be publicizing your content. And the nice thing that Squarespace offers for social media is you connect your accounts and say if you make a new blog post, it goes out to Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, wherever you want to go, really. I mean, they can do everything, practically. Every social media platform out there.
Yeah, absolutely. It's all tied in. And it's not just the little simple social media share icons that you see on a lot of sites, although they do have those as well. But you can actually tie it in, you know, tell it to auto-tweet my posts when I add them, or share a page on my Facebook page, a page from my website over on Facebook. Lots of things you can do there with the connected accounts. Really great feature. And then as we talk about that, plus the design, you want all this to look great no matter how someone is reading your site, how they're visiting, whether it's on a desktop, whether it's on a smartphone or a tablet. Responsive design automatically reflows your site so that it looks beautiful on any screen size or orientation without you having to do anything. So that is a really wonderful feature to have and a huge time saver that makes your content easily accessible with no extra effort on your part.
Yeah, this is a must anymore because we've all got devices of all shapes and sizes these days. You want a website that's going to work on all of them.
Most definitely. And one more thing you can do with Squarespace, if you want to sell products, physical products, digital products, whatever it is, you can use the commerce feature, which integrates Stripe into the platform. Now, Stripe is one of the most popular ways right now to build an online store, to accept credit cards, to do your order processing and such. You know, there are different ways that you can do it, and I've worked with some of them in the past. I've integrated them into client websites. I've set up corporate PayPal for myself, for my own company and my own website. And Stripe is so easy. And because you're already a Squarespace customer, you get instant approval and you don't have to do any paperwork. It's just a 30-second merchant sign up. And in a matter of minutes, you can be receiving money for purchases via direct deposit. It also manages full tax and shipping rules by region for you. There's an order management interface that lets you track outstanding orders, resend customer update emails, print packing slips. You can move your Shopify or BigCartel inventory over to Squarespace if you already have a store in just a few clicks. Really, really simple. And I would really say the best way that you're going to find anywhere right now to sell products online and manage the order process. And on top of that, it's only $24 per month for commerce. So that gives you all the features that you would get for blog, portfolio, or other types of websites, plus Stripe. For only $24 per month. Now, if it's a regular website or blog, it's just $8 per month to start. And that actually, it's quite a robust package they have for $8 per month. And that's probably all you're going to need. But if you want unlimited everything, which is actually the most popular option, that's just $16 per month. And that's it. And as a Trek FM listener, you can save 10% off these prices on your first purchase by using offer code TREK12. So try it for yourself. That's the best way to find out how great Squarespace is. You can try it free for 14 days. There's no credit card required. You have access to all the features. And then when you sign up, use offer code TREK12 to get 10% off. And to do that, just go over to squarespace.com to get started. And we really thank Squarespace for their support of The Ready Room and Trek FM and making it possible for us to bring all of our shows to you every week. Time travel has always been a mainstay of Star Trek storytelling. Starting with The Nick of Time on TOS, all the way to Stormfront on Enterprise, our crews have brought us no fewer than 50 flavors of temporal treats. Voyager is tied with TNG for the most time travel outings, and half of these were named to Star Trek 101's list of the 10 essential Voyager episodes. And today we're going to talk about one of the most fun and perhaps most confusing of these, Relativity. And to help us do that, we finally have back with us on the Ready Room, international sex symbol and co-host of To the Journey, Mr. Tristan Riddell. Tristan, thanks for finally coming back.
I dragged him in here. It's the only reason why.
It's good to be back. It's been way too long. And every time I come back, you remind me of that nickname of the ISS because I constantly forget. It's not that I have a poster of it with my picture and the name underneath at all. I don't have that. So
you should.
What's that poster behind you on the wall there that says "Keep Calm" and ISS?
Ignore that. Ignore the man behind the curtain. So.
All right. Well, I'm glad you're back with us, and also joining us, someone who we're keeping locked up here in the Ready Room, so that his Trek insights are always at our fingertips. Once again, joining us, it's John Mills. John, that's a really nice corner you've set up for yourself over there, the futon and all. Nice touch.
Oh, yeah. I figure so long as I'm going to be caught in the transporter buffer, I might as well pull in as many things as possible to, so that when you rematerialize me, in the Dyson sphere, I have some stuff to bring along with me. But thank you very much for having me back. It's very much a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Excellent. Good. We're glad to have you back. All right, guys. So we've already been talking about it a bit in the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
We're going to go ahead and start talking about relativity here. And Tristan, you chose the episode, so I'm just going to ask you to kick off the discussion.
Well, this episode, obviously I chose it because I really enjoy it and I'm a sucker for time travel. And Char and I were just talking about how... I talk about all the time that before I got the seasons of television of Star Trek, before I could afford it, I got the fan collectives that came out, and I got the Q one, the Klingon one, the Borg one, and I got the time travel one, and that was probably my favorite one to watch over and over again. I would just put every disc in and just let it ride, and Relativity was not on there, and it made me so angry that, like, this probably has the most time jumps out of any single Star Trek episode, possibly combined, and it wasn't even on the fan collective. But
blasphemy.
I think it's a little bit of blasphemy, but I really like this one because it focuses on Seven, but it's not about her discovering her humanity. It's not about her saying
great point
individual, 15 times in the episode. It uses her wit, her guile, and we get some cute moments along the way. And, some people find it confusing, but I don't know. I feel like I'm not comparing it to Inception, but I feel like some people, the same people who are confused with Inception are probably going to be confused with this episode. Now, this is by no means as layered as Inception or as good, obviously, but... it's just I like the mind trips. I like time travel that makes you think, that makes you catch up. Does it get a little overlabored sometimes? Yeah, but I feel like the cool moments and the nice throwbacks are nice, and also just seeing Utopia Planitia was worth it for me.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, one line that Seven does use in here, she doesn't talk about humanity and stuff like this, but she does say that the ship is an efficient design, although I'm not sure that the episode is an efficient design.
No, I think we'll have to talk about this later on.
Yeah. Well, John, how about you? What are your first thoughts on Relativity?
Well, I think it's a very cool episode. I think that actually for somebody like, I mean, Voyager's not my favorite of the Star Trek series. We all got our thing.
It's not mine either, folks. I'm not trying to fool anyone here.
No, but this is an easy episode, I mean, from my point of view, to plug into, because it is there. It's not a perfect episode by any stretch of the imagination, but it's fairly easy to slip into it because it brings you up. If you're not terribly familiar with Voyager, if you're not if it's not constantly in your wheelhouse, it's something that, because of that, the intro piece, you can slide right into it and it moves along. And I think that in terms of who they chose, Seven to be the, you know, sort of the main character of the story, I think that was a wise choice, because it made it, since she's sort of the quote unquote outsider character, it's easier to, from my perspective as an audience member, to go along with her through these episodes, through these escapades that they have her go through to try to find the bomb, try to stop everything from happening. So, you know, I think on the whole, it's a successful episode. It's fun to watch.
It is fun to watch. One of my favorite things is the intro, where we have Caretaker before Caretaker. It feels like missing scenes of Caretaker, even filling in these gaps. And I absolutely love that. I loved seeing Voyager in space dock. That whole visual was breathtaking. And just seeing the old attitude of Janeway touring her ship for the first time. You know, in your head, you're making comparisons between Janeway now in the fifth season, as you're watching it, to Janeway season one, whom we're watching with Relativity, at least in parts. And that, I don't know, I get a kick out of that.
Did you guys feel that the Bun of Steel was a little bit fluffier than it should have been?
It was so
I didn't
fluffy.
Go back to watch to compare, but it just
oh
seemed
my gosh.
A little bit fluffy.
Like, okay, she was almost pulling a Marge Simpson with the height of that thing.
Oh, it wasn't that bad.
Okay, I'm exaggerating, but yes, it was uber fluffy. And I have the feeling that when Kate Mulgrew read this script, just deep down, I think she sighed. Like, oh, the Bun again. I thought we were steel. Over this.
Yeah. Well, you guys are right about the Utopia Planitia. This is actually the only episode in all of Star Trek that we actually get to see Utopia Planitia, like the real fleet yards, that's not like a holographic representation or something. That was really cool because they talk about it and, you know, you feel like you know the place, right? Because that's where the ships are built.
Yeah, but totally.
We finally get to see it. The original script only called, though, for one dry dock and Voyager, and that was going to be it. And then they went in and the effects guys were like, look, if we're going to do Utopia Planitia, we want to really do Utopia Planitia. So they put in all the extra work and fleshed it out. And I'm glad they did because it's such a, it's an awesome scene.
That is why you hire nerds.
It is.
That's right. They'll go above and beyond to
be
nerdy.
They get the job done.
That's right.
It's also cool to see Voyager and Dry Dock too, because the paint job is sort of unfinished. It has like, it's like you feel like they like, they have some ship that flies around and spray paints the ship's gray, you know, afterwards, or something that's kind of white looking, at least here. It'll be curious. It'll be interesting to see when they remaster Voyager how this looks in HD.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I can't wait for that. That'll
be
beautiful.
this would be a great sequence to see in HD. I agree. I would want to go back and see that. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, you guys know what one of the first things that tipped me off in this episode that something wasn't quite right was right at the beginning when Janeway beams on to Voyager and the Admiral is there. Do you guys notice anything about that Admiral that made you say, something's a little odd here?
His uniform? Because they can't pick an Admiral's uniform?
Well, it is his uniform, but he was not wearing a belt buckle. He wasn't even wearing a belt.
That's right. Yeah, he wasn't wearing a belt at all. You're right. Yeah.
Oh, my God. I didn't notice that, but wow. Talk about blasphemy.
I can't keep track of how many Admiral uniforms there are.
Maybe, Maybe he had to let the belt go because he'd put on a couple of extra pounds.
Well, I think that might be anymore. What happened. I'm thinking he's probably he's the lowest ranked Admiral, the rank where you don't yet get to design your own belt buckle. And so you don't even get a belt at that point.
He hasn't gone through the hazing process yet.
Yeah. He didn't earn that badge yet in Admiral training.
That's right.
I guess so. All right. Well, what else did you guys think about talking about this as a Caretaker prequel? We've talked about the outside view of Voyager. What did you guys think about seeing activity on the ship before it actually left dry dock?
Well, one thing that really bothered me was that they activated the EMH.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
Now, I have my own theory on this.
Okay.
Because that has been pointed out by fans as a continuity error, and it probably is. It's just sloppy writing, which, of course, you know, we always talk about how Voyager is a little bit less concerned about these continuity issues than some of the other series are. However, my thinking on it are a few things. One of them is that it could be that the Doctor had his memory wiped after this before they left, because they do make the comment that, you know, his personality could use a little work or something along those lines. So maybe they did something to him before they actually left and he doesn't remember being activated. It could also be that when he talks about, well, one thing could just be the changes to the timeline. You know, we could be seeing one way that this happened, and maybe that's not how it actually happened, because we have all these different temporal incursions taking place here. The other one is just when the Doctor makes that comment later on in Projections, when he says that he was first activated during the crisis in Caretaker. Maybe he's simply referring to the first time he was activated for actual duty in a medical emergency. So who knows? But yeah, they do activate him, which should not have happened.
I like the idea that his memory would, that, like, they would have rebooted him. Like that, that this first meeting went so, you know, Janeway didn't really care, but like the Admiral was there and he was kind of a jerk. When, you know, and granted, he still had a lot of character development to go when he was activated, you know, when the series started. But maybe it was one of those things where they did reboot him and they were like, you know, could you guys work on that just a little bit? Try to make him a little softer around the edges here. And so I could easily buy into that. That theory, like, that holds water for me.
In my headcanon is that, you know, they were ripping out wires and they were doing work all over the ship, and then, you know, some lieutenant tells the ensign to pull the green wire and he's like, "Oh crap, I pulled a red one." He's like, "Well, I guess that just rebooted the EMH, so whatever, it's cool, you know. It's fine."
Yeah.
Yeah, it's EMH bleach basically.
That works. What else? So Char, you're a big Janeway fan. What did you think about Janeway strolling onto the bridge for the first time? And it's bigger than she thought.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was exciting. We didn't get to see this in Caretaker. It's not a rehash. Her stepping onto the bridge for the first time. I love it when she says, "It's bigger than I thought it would be." Because I'm sure if you could actually get on the set, you would think, yeah, this is a little different than how we perceive it just watching on screen. So I thought that was a nice little touch. And the whole thing with the meeting room, how it is efficient. But yeah, after all these years, Starfleet still can't construct a decent ready room or whatever she said. And I love that because of all the staff meetings that they have. And yeah, you know, I don't know if there is a better way to do that. I don't know.
When she walks in and the Admiral is with her and she says coffee and the Admiral's like, "No, thank you." I don't think she was asking the Admiral if he wanted coffee. I think she was just talking to herself.
coffee. She next
straight for
business.
The replicator. It's like, if this replicator can make black coffee, I'm fine with whatever else is going on in the ship. But if it can't, we are not leaving until you fix it.
You are right. You are abso-fraggin-lutely right. Yeah. Yeah, this whole scene, I think, is one of the best parts of this episode, and it makes me so nostalgic for watching Caretaker. I almost want to go back and watch Caretaker after watching this episode, just because of those early moments. Gets me all excited again for the beginning. I thought they did a nice job of recreating it all.
Right. Did anyone notice or did it bother you that the color scheme is not the same as it was in Caretaker, because they made set changes in season 4? And because for me, I don't even pay attention to that. It's like, okay, well,
I didn't care.
It's fine.
I noticed it little bit. I'm pretty forgiving, you know, when it comes to stuff like that. Although when they do pull off changes, I mean, like revert to the changes, I mean, it goes a long way. And when they forget, I'm just kind of like, eh, whatever, you know, we're getting the story down. But yeah, if they actually did change the color scheme back, I would have applauded, but I read something about how the trim on the table changed or something.
Yes, it did.
I can't remember. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a fire on the set and they had to reconstruct it. And I don't know why they changed the color, but they did.
Wait, there was a fire on the set. I told them not to let Neelix cook on the set anymore.
He was supposed to stay in the kitchen. He, of course, did not listen.
Yeah. He was having a cooking class. He was having a seminar trying to teach people how to, you know, make their own dishes and that sort of thing. It just went wrong.
Did.
Yeah, he said, you know, at the next staff meeting, let's do yakiniku. Let's just get it out there. Let's just grill the meat on the table. It'll be fine, you know?
I could see him doing that.
Well, the beginning of this episode, they get to it fairly quickly with Seven discovers that there's some kind of weapon that's been installed on the ship. So you think that that's going to go somewhere, right? But then, for me, and this, I want to get your thoughts on this, because this never bothered me in the past. I never really paid any attention to it. But when I went back now and I rewatched the episode to prepare for the show here, and I watched it twice, and I hadn't seen it in probably a couple of years, this time I felt like, can we get on with it? Can we get on with it? We're talking about the ship and the technical this, and it has a class 9 warp core, and it has all this stuff on the ship. And then I looked at the timestamp, and we're 20 minutes into the episode, and I still feel like we don't have a story yet. Like, we're just kind of meandering through random things about Voyager getting ready to leave. And I'm remembering that there was this thing at the beginning with Seven. Where is this going? And I know there's like some temporal thing going on, but I want to move on. And then finally, 23 minutes in, we actually find out somewhat what's going on with the time ship and everything there. Do you guys have the same feeling, or do you feel like the story's pulling you along from the beginning?
I agree with that. And it's very hard to watch the episode. And I mean, forgive me that I can't remember episode names always off the top of my head, but one of the episodes with a similar type of situation, like this seemed to echo a little bit at least, was the Next Generation episode with Kelsey Grammer, where they were caught in the loop.
Cause and effect.
Yes, cause and effect. Yes, thank you. And it feels like this could have benefited a little bit more from that type of structure. Like the less effort to be linear, since it was dealing with, you know, time jumps and time travel. Because one of the things that cause and effect, that episode stands out, is because it immediately grabbed you with everything blew up and everybody's dead. Oh, hey, what happened? This is only 3 minutes. What just happened? And then they back it up, and they keep backing it up just a little bit more each time. And I'm not saying that they were under any obligation to do that again, but jumbling things up. And Tristan, you mentioned Inception earlier. Like, an Inception style would have benefited this episode greatly. In terms of the fact that, like, maybe shown a couple of scenes out of sequence, or, you know, to just sort of like pull the wool over our eyes, or actually leave us a little bit more confused, which granted you still kind of are at the end of the episode, but, you know, to sort of make it a little bit more fun, a little bit more of a memento, or a little bit more jumbled, so that you're sitting there and you're like, oh, wait a minute, I saw that person two sequences ago, or before that last commercial break. What's going on? Wait a minute. That, you know, I'm trying to make sense of this sort of thing. I think it could have benefited from a little bit less effort to be linear in the way it told the story.
I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm a big fan of non-linear storytelling, and you know, like the movies that you talked about, and, you know, not just to keep talking about Nolan, but like you said, with Memento and with Inception, I mean, just not... Even you could throw in The Fountain, you know, it just, I feel like jumbling it all together, I feel like that definitely would have benefited the episode, but that might have been a little too dangerous for Voyager at the time and its demographic. Maybe not, like I said, I think that would have been a great idea, but I feel like the time and the climate of the television era, as it were, that might have been too advanced, and maybe I'm not giving the audience enough credit, it definitely would have been seen as avant-garde, but I think it was too dangerous for them at the time to try to do that.
Fair point.
I think especially for the UPN executives who,
yeah,
you know, how they meddled with Voyager and they really meddled with Enterprise. That's probably something where if Nick Sagan had gone to them and said, this is what I want to do with the story, and if Brannon had backed him up and said, this is what we want to do, you know, those executives might have said that, look, the audience isn't going to follow that. Why don't we just tell the story like this?
Every time I've done a short film that's been out of sequence or nonlinear, whenever I pitch it to one of my producers, they're just like, well, how about we film it normally and then we'll make a cut that's normal and then maybe we can experiment it and edit with editing later. And then, of course, that never gets made. And so it's just people are so terrified of confusing the audience and not spoon-feeding the material that it very rarely happens.
I mean, that's a really fair point. And, maybe that speaks to the Voyager that could have been or the Enterprise that could have been too, is if those executives had backed off, they could have done something more special than and gotten more fan love, because they would have recaptured that fire that made us all love Star Trek to begin with, which was, wow, this is different from what I've seen before. But, to speak to your point, Tristan, I can totally see that. I could totally see, not that they did, but I could totally see a situation where they're like, oh, here's a new way to tell a TV story. And the executives being like, would you like your check to clear or would you like to leave your office?
Exactly.
Yeah, I feel like one of the things that really plagued Voyager and Enterprise too, certainly, was the fact that they belonged to a network. They weren't syndicated like TNG and DS9. The writers did not have the same kind of freedom to just do what they wanted. And I think it really watered down the shows, unfortunately.
Well, you look at DS9, and I think that especially in the latter seasons of DS9, one reason that the show became so great and the writing became so great is because A, it wasn't on a network, and B, the people who would have been overseeing it, even as they did TNG, which was syndicated, they were involved in the movies and Voyager and this new network. And they were pretty much like, you guys go make DS9, finish it out 7 seasons. We're busy over here. And so they were allowed to just right. And I agree. I think on Voyager too, if they had had that type of freedom creatively, then we would have seen a lot of different things. About this, talking about my feeling that we didn't have a story until halfway through the episode, I also was feeling this time as I'm watching it that even once we know that the time ship is going to make this incursion into the 24th century to Voyager's location, and we know that the time ship, as the audience, we know the time ship is causing all of these weird temporal disruptions that are plaguing the ship. The crew doesn't know what's causing them. I felt that for me, the episode would have been more interesting if we as the audience also didn't know what was going on, because we know exactly what's going on and the crew doesn't. And so I feel like also, for our characters, the mystery that they're trying to solve, it's weak for me because I already know exactly what's going on. And sometimes that works in storytelling. I'm not sure that it works for me in this episode.
I think you're absolutely right. Mm. I think if we as the audience would have been totally clueless and we were trying to figure it out along with the crew, not that this episode doesn't lure you in, but I think we would have all been lured in much more. We got to know how this ends.
See, I had the different experience when I watched it. I felt like I was along for the ride. Like I was with Seven the entire time, trying to figure things out along with her. Like, yeah, we were ahead of the curve with her, but she was still our kind of our emissary through the episode. And I enjoyed that. Like I enjoyed, like sometimes I enjoy knowing a little bit more than everybody else does, but I could see why that would be frustrating at some times. I mean, I'm just a huge sucker for you know being in the future and just being around 29th century technology again, and just seeing those uniforms and seeing that phaser again and
that ship.
Yeah, I liked the inside of the ship, but mainly probably because that was just an Enterprise E redress. But I wasn't a big fan of the ship because it was so unlike anything that we've ever seen before. Even with the Enterprise J, You know, like that still looked like a Federation ship, but with this ship, it was just so, it was too alien to me. And also, I wanted to see like holograms with, you know, mobile emitters running around in that
they
ship.
They probably don't need them in the 29th century. Right.
But that's where his mobile emitter came from.
Yeah, well, never mind. I'm forgetting time-space conundrum here. Ugh.
Yeah, the ship is kind of odd, Tristan, on the outside. And I went back to look at images and compare because in my mind, when I see this the ship Relativity, it reminds me of the Zindi aquatic ships on Enterprise. Oh. And then I went and I compared pictures and they're not actually that similar, but they're similar enough that in my head, it always, I kind of connect them.
I get it. No, I can understand that. Like I can see the essence of it, but it's not a strict adaptation, but I can see that. One thing I did like about the whole aesthetic of the 29th century was, I don't know if I'm alone in this, but I loved the uniforms.
Uniforms were really sharp.
Absolutely loved those. I thought those were really sharp. I mean, I felt like they could have, you know, made the colors a little bit more different. Like it was kind of hard figuring out which department was which.
That's a case where I think when we see remastered Voyager, I think those uniforms, the contrast of the colors will come out more because I think they're really muddied in SD. Yeah.
All right, cool.
But it's kind of cool. It's kind of like when, do you remember when Apple did the original IMAX? Of course, there was the Bondi Blue IMAX, but then they did the Lifesaver candy colored ones. But after that, they did the gem colored ones that had the very dark, like ruby and topaz and jade colors. These uniforms for me, Tristan, are more like those gem colored contrasts as opposed to the Lifesaver colors that we get on Voyager in the 24th century.
That's a great comparison.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, but to find a middle ground between the audience knowing too much and not knowing enough, it might have worked better if we had seen Seven meddling around like without talking to anybody initially, over any sort of communications device, like getting to, you know, see her fiddling around, seeing and like getting into the thing, and instead of saying, okay, I found it, what am I supposed to do now, like see her just carrying out the task, so that you're completely flat-footed, where it's like, well, wait a minute, why? Okay, I know something's wrong. I know she's probably back. There's something happening here. And then just as they're about to get to her, you hear a voice say, we got to get you out of there. Hang on, you know, and then pull her out. And then it's like, maybe that, right, that catches you just a little more off guard. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, it makes you wonder initially, what is going on? What is she doing? Why?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
Although I still got the feeling of what is she doing and why after we come back from the credits and then they go off into this whole other story for 20 minutes without coming back to what she was doing.
Well, I actually had it I had that moment slightly before at the very end of the teaser where we see Seven in a blue science uniform. She's wearing real clothes. Yes! I really wish she would have pulled a Deanna Troi and just stuck with it because it looks great on her.
Right, this would have been the transition episode.
Yeah.
And maybe they even have a throwaway line where she's like, I don't know, I'm more comfortable like this.
Yeah, that would have been genius. That would have been great if, like, after this episode, she said to the crew, like, I think it's time that maybe I should do this. Or, like, Doctor, you can make me a cocktail dress that, that makes it so that it helps my implants or something. You can make me a Starfleet uniform now that does the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it will also support your implants.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry.
It's funny that Jeri Ryan said in an interview that she had a fan ask her, why don't you ever wear a Starfleet uniform? And she said, well, Seven's not Starfleet, so that's why Seven's not in a Starfleet uniform. And that was right before she got the script for this episode and found out that she was going to be in a Starfleet uniform for this episode. But it just made me think that, you know, even after this, the fact that Seven is not a Starfleet officer, I guess they, you know, they can't put her in a Starfleet uniform. But yeah, Tristan, like you said, she could have a black cocktail dress with the blue shoulders. That's not actually
that's something.
That's not exactly what I meant, but I was talking about the episode Someone to Watch Over Me. When she goes out on a date, Like, she's wearing nice dress, you know, and like Doctor made that for her. Come on, he can make a, like, they could have made her a crewman, you know, with no rank and just put her in the jumpsuit.
Yeah.
Right.
She didn't have to have any pips.
Yeah, they could have done that.
And also, I'm glad you said about her going out on a date, you know, someone to watch over me. Why is it that there's almost a mandatory sort of, I don't know, the flirtation procedures in Starfleet seem to be a little bit creepy and out of place in the workplace. It's like, oh, hey, hello, what's going on? Maybe the next time I see you around, we can go out to dinner. So it's like, you're trying to get a ship ready for little unprofessional.
It's too bad you're not a member of this crew. Darn, yeah, because, asked you out.
Because then I could get brought up on sexual harassment charges. That would be very convenient.
Wouldn't that be like the worst episode ever of Voyager? Like on a very special Star Trek Voyager, 7 of 9 deals with sexual harassment in the workplace. Like, why'd you lock the door in the Harponics Bay?
Harry, why does Harry always have his door locked?
And why is he in there for like 15 minutes at a time?
Oh. Why does he have that blindfold? Why does he sleep with the blindfold on? Why does he keep a blindfold on his nightstand?
That's what I really want to know.
Captain, there's a preponderance of death's head moths down in engineering. Who's hatching them? Sorry, a little obscure.
Oh, man. All right, well, let's go on to another topic here and the heart of the episode, which is messing with the timeline. I found it interesting that before Braxton himself, so staying in character in the episode, before Braxton finds out that he himself is the saboteur, he's going off on Janeway the same way that Lexley and Dahmer talked about Kirk in Trials and Tribulations. Yes.
Yeah.
About how she's like a menace to time and no one F's with time like Janeway does. And I'm thinking, dude, you're on a time ship, a Federation time ship, and your entire job is to F with time. Yep. What are you talking about?
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. When Janeway F's with time, I mean, yeah, that gives me a headache too. But when Braxton messes with time, it gives me a migraine. Okay.
Well, and he calls out Janeway for what he's doing, what his, actually his, what? His right. job.
Your job is to F with time.
He has a license. He has a license to do it. Janeway does not.
Is that it?
That
he's
is
a license to change the time.
Yeah. He has his membership card and his collector's ring and everything.
He's a member of a union, okay? And Janeway is encroaching on union work right there. That is why he has a problem with
and
that.
And this was essentially so just his way of striking.
You know what? The only thing...
Exactly right.
They call it temporal psychosis.
Well, yeah. The only thing this guy has a license to do is to freaking make time jokes. Because that's all they do, apparently, in the 29th century on time ships.
That's all I would do.
Time jokes. Well, we know that. I mean, that's, you know, Lexley and Dahmer, they make time jokes as well.
Yeah, just
that's
really?
What they do
really?
With the,
God. Like, got nothing else. Yeah. Get some hobbies.
Like,
this
ship is essentially if those two got drafted into... Like into ship duty. Like this is like how this ship is ran is how those two in the 24th century would love for things to be run.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
While we're talking about those two and on the bridge of the relativity here, when Braxton is there, did it take you guys a minute to realize, think back the first time you saw this, you didn't know what was going on, that was Captain Braxton?
Yeah,
because Braxton was played by Alan G. Royal originally, and they couldn't get him back, so they got Bruce McGill to play it. And since it didn't look like Braxton, it kind of throws me for a minute. I think the story would be more effective if they could have gotten the original actor.
I agree. It did kind of throw me off a little bit.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. Like, it took me a little bit to kind of find my bearings where they're like, oh, okay, they're calling him Braxton. He has the same.
That's what I mean.
He has the same logo, you know, the same insignia. Okay, I guess they couldn't get the same actor back. I don't know. Like, we keep talking about when they redo Voyager, like when they remaster it, I wonder if they'll pull a Lucas and insert this guy.
Watch your step, young man.
Hey, did I say positive or negative? If you're inferring negative, maybe you're dealing with your own demons there, John.
It's my own temporal psychosis, Tristan.
This episode gives you temporal psychosis, right?
Right. Why is it temporal psychosis? Why can't it just be normal psychosis?
I for one, like, love that. You know? I love that they came up with that, that they gave us that term. Temporal psychosis and temporal incursions. Everything is temporal. Just like how everything was space something, like in the 50s and 60s. Like, oh, it's a space alien, or like it's a space storm. You know, like like now, because we've conquered space, we now have to conquer time. So now everything is temporal something.
I think they should have gone all the way in this episode and had, instead of fractal calculus that they had to study at the academy, it should have been temporal calculus.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How sick do you think, considering they called it out at least twice in this, that I can call to mind, how sick do you think everybody on that ship, the Relativity, is of hearing the phrase tempus fugit with a slightly sarcastic snicker? It's like, oh, fine. Yes. All right. We get it. We get it. Enough already.
One other thing, talking about sarcastic there, that one thing that also got me a little bit in this episode, and you can tell me what you think if I'm just being picky here, but what I don't like in Star Trek, but pretty much in anything, is when the writers are winking at the audience too much. And I feel like when they set the first course to go into the 24th century and he gives them the coordinates and he says, target USS Voyager. It's like, it's almost like he's looking at the camera and winking at the audience. We're going to go get Voyager now. Do you feel that? It's just, it feels like there's a lot of this kind of, at this point, when we're talking about, this is 572 episodes of Star Trek, that the winking goes on a little bit more as we go along.
Yeah, I think we could figure that out, really.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's sort of a trap, but I think it's easy to fall into, and it's like you said, you know, so many episodes eventually, like, everything's a self-reference because you've done so many different, you know, especially with, you know, you said at the top of the show, it's, you know, like 50 flavors of time travel. It's kind of like, by this point, it's not even groundbreaking for them to do a time travel episode. It's kind of like, all right, well, yeah, we're screwing with the timeline again, so let's go and have some fun with it. And so it's like, I agree it's a trap, I just don't see how they can't fall into it, especially, I mean...
Well, I don't have a problem with them saying Voyager. It's just sort of the delivery of the line. It's like if he just says, target USS Voyager.
I see what you're saying. Okay, I get you now.
I'm kind of with you about the delivery, not so much about what they said, but the delivery, because that guy, even though I like that actor, I felt like when I was listening to him deliver the lines, I was like, wow, he memorized all those numbers. He also felt like he was surprised that he memorized all those numbers.
I would be too.
It was impressive.
So. Yeah, I was impressed, but I think he was too, and that's what kind of... took me out of it.
He was just kind of excited at the end,
like,
and he
3.
said,
USS 1, 2, Voyager. 1, 4, 5, 6, USS Voyager. You know, it's just...
Wink!
Hey.
Yeah, once Carnes he got was, it, he's like, his swag factor Ryan. Went off the charts, and he just, I am good! Hooray me!
He's the official coordinate deliverer on the Relativity.
Right. Yeah.
Every time they need a number, they just call him.
Yeah.
I'm sure at the academy, like you have spelling bees in high school. They have this. You have to deliver coordinates. There is a competition for this. He's probably like he's won it 4 years in a row when he was at the academy.
he has like little medals and certificates in his quarters.
Yeah, he's got a whole trophy shelf in his quarters.
Yeah.
Another thing that I was wondering, and I can't remember, Tristan, it was ages and ages ago, but did you do Year of Hell with us here on the Ready Room when we talked about Anorax and all his time incursions?
Probably.
I was thinking about you when I was thinking about this. which is that didn't these guys read Janeway's logs about Anorax? Because so much of what the Federation is doing in this episode feels like Anorax to me.
Yes.
Like they're trying to go back. They keep
trying to
correct the same thing over and over.
Okay,
did you feel
one
that?
One thing that does not work for me in this episode is the fact that, okay, your job is to F with time, but you are effing with time even more by effing with time, which is what Anorax did, and it just seems to make more of a mess of everything. You're not making it better, you're making it worse. Please stop.
I can't really compare them to Anorax, because Anorax was a megalomaniac who was bent on correcting something that he, he was trying to erase an entire civilization to, prevent a war and get his wife back. I feel like these are much more like time cops, you know, like Van Damme style, where when other people are misusing time travel, like in the temporal Cold War, it's their job to fix it. I don't think it's them going out of their way to make their own timeline better or to prevent a disease or to prevent a war that already happened. I feel like it's just their job to keep the Kirks and the Janeways in line.
Okay, so
except
what about
Except for
Anorax?
Braxton, who ultimately does want to erase Janeway.
And that's why he gets thrown in jail.
For crimes he has yet to commit.
Yeah, very Minority Report-esque.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, and also the line at the end where they say what they have four versions of him in prison.
Yeah.
They're like, don't worry, we'll put them all back together at some point.
We're gonna put
them
all back together. What? Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
That sounds really bad.
How many timelines are you corrupting by doing this? And how do you know which timeline is correct anyway?
That sounds awesome.
Yes.
That's
exactly
the question. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, really.
Yeah.
How the F do you know that?
They're the time cops.
That's why you don't F with time.
The thing is, if you do mess with time, then you wind up, the thing is, it's like, I can't even keep up with it, where it's like, maybe messing with time is maybe it's the Kyle Reese thing. Maybe John Connor doesn't exist unless you mess with time. And if John Connor doesn't exist, Kyle Reese doesn't go back. And oh my God, how does this work? It doesn't. Putting him together, like, I'm really intrigued. If they come back to TV, I want something with the temporal cops where I get to see this process, because in my mind, it is really unpleasant.
Yeah.
What
do you do?
A bad thing to
you
happen.
Lock them all in a room together and then you turn something on? I don't know.
Yeah, an intrinsic field generator that's like what they did to Dr. Manhattan or from Lost. It was like the two giant electromagnets in Lost.
With the bunny?
No, not with the bunny. With, forget his name. Brother, that guy.
Desmond.
Desmond. Yeah, that's what they do. They throw a bunch of them in there on the island. Hey, we can have a crossover episode.
Braxton's on the island right now.
Oh, my God.
Done. We have resolved the paradox. It's all fixed. It's all fixed.
When they said combine them together, they really just meant sweep them under the rug and send them to the island.
Exactly.
That's what the island is for. That's where corrupt Starfleet officers in the 29th century go.
Oh,
awesome.
My.
I'd watch it.
I want fan fiction.
Yeah.
I want fan fiction of this now.
I'd see that.
Right this
there probably
second.
Is, John.
Get working on that internet, and I'll have to work on my Google Foo to see if I can turn it up.
So maybe the smoke monster are actually the spirits of all the corrupt Starfleet officers who have all been swept under the rug to the island. They've all combined into this one creature.
That would have been more creative than what they actually did.
Hey, I like the island security system. Uh-huh. Yeah, that one was a little anticlimactic, but hey.
All right. Well, we mentioned the Minority Report a moment ago, and that's exactly what I thought of when they say that Braxton is under arrest for crimes he has yet to commit. And I don't know. What did you think about the general twist, though, when we found out it was Braxton? Because that is one thing in this episode that did really catch me. Like, I wasn't expecting that. And
really?
Maybe part of it was because of the deal with the actor. I don't know. It just, because I had a little bit of trouble again with this idea that this was Braxton and his interactions with Janeway. It's, you know, Memory Alpha actually groups this episode as part three of the Future's End arc, which I don't know. I think it's a little bit odd. I mean, technically, yes, they're connected, but maybe that would make more sense to me if I felt more of that direct connection where it actually was the same actor back again. So as we were going through this, I don't know, you know, they were trying to throw you off with the Kazon, and like, you knew it wasn't the Kazon who planted it. And it was a little bit confusing too, where the first time through you see that Seven goes to Voyager in dry dock, finds the weapon in place there. But then later when they're in the battle with the Kazon and there's no sign of the weapon, but that's in a later time frame. And then on a second watch, I realize, okay, no, well, Seven is saying that the weapon is there in dry dock, but it's out of temporal phase, so it's not there, but she can somehow detect it. And right. That was a little bit confusing as well. But with that, and then with the Kazon and everything, when we finally find out that it is Braxton, I thought it was a pretty good little twist there. What did you think about it?
I want to know, Chris, who you thought the villain was.
I didn't really think I was kind of thinking it was right. Some random villain. Like,
really?
Things get mixed up in my head a little bit because I watch so much Enterprise in the recent years, and you've got the whole temporal Cold War and all this, you know, people hopping back and forth through time, and you've got the Suliban trying to destroy the Enterprise and such. And so, you know, I don't know if I really had any particular person in mind, but I felt that for other things that I felt didn't really get pulled off well in this episode, I thought the Braxton bit worked decently.
Really?
I agree. I agree, because I thought it would just be maybe a throwaway villain, somebody that they just have show up for like one episode or something, where it's like, oh, well, Voyager flew through too close to my asteroid or something like that. And it like, I didn't, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm a gullible viewer where it's like, I see somebody in Starfleet uniform with the exception of Valeris, and I'm kind of like, oh no, you're not doing anything wrong. And it's like, you know, I didn't think it was going to be the time cop guy, you know, or, you know, I figured it would just be somebody who was a throwaway that maybe stowed away on the ship and they didn't know because he kept staying out of phase or something like that. And but I didn't think it was going to be, you know, Braxton or even, you know, anybody on the temporal ship or anything like that. So when it was like, oh my gosh, it's Braxton, I was like, oh, that's kind of cool. You know?
Okay, so was I the only one on this panel who was not surprised by that at all? Tristan?
No, I kind of saw it coming.
Me too. I thought, who else could it be?
Yeah.
Besides some random villain who we don't care about, and they're not going to do that.
I guess I shouldn't say...
They're not going to do that. They do it over and over and over.
Yeah.
In Star Trek. Sort of random villain we don't care about.
I shouldn't say that I saw it coming. I should say I wasn't surprised. I don't know if I did say that before, but
I wasn't surprised, but I didn't necessarily see it coming.
I think they put a lot of emphasis on how much Braxton didn't like Janeway, about how he even talked about being stranded in the 20th century, even though we saw him earlier when that actually happened, and he said that he had no memory of that timeline. That kind of pisses me off.
But, again, which timeline are we talking about?
Yeah, which timeline are we talking about here? I felt like they focused too much on it to be a throwaway. And so that's why I was kind of like, oh, yeah, Braxton. Yeah, no, I can see that.
Of course. Yeah, I agree.
Well, apparently with this temporal incursion technology that they have, you must always be dressed as an Ensign Science Division.
Apparently.
Well, because nobody actually, as we found from Seven's incursion into engineering, right? Somebody sees an ensign, hits on her creepily, but at the same time, you know, the science uniform isn't questioned. Oh, I work for the shipyards. Okay, It's like, you know, there's no security challenge at all. I understand you're not locked down or anything like that, but it's a new face on a high, you know, on a highly sensitive, and you're in engineering in a ship that's got experimental things going on. You would think you'd be like, well, actually, wait a minute. I've seen just about everybody up to this point. And could I at least see some identification?
Yeah.
Just one piece of it?
Okay, here's one possibility. Remember that, and they never really fleshed this out at any point that I know of, but remember that Voyager has bioneural gel packs built into the circuitry. It's possible that you would have people from science division and medical personnel involved in the engineering of the ship in that case.
That's true. But it's still pretty rare to see a blue shirt in engineering.
Heck, we've even seen Picard as a blue shirt ensign, which I find odd.
Yeah, that was odd. That was wrong.
That whenever I see a blue shirt ensign, that's pretty much what I think of. I just think about how awkward it was seeing Patrick Stewart in that uniform.
Awkward misfit in blue.
That reminds me, I was thinking in this episode that Braxton is the oldest ensign in Starfleet.
Yeah, he doesn't really go out and get them, does he?
No. All right, well, let's talk about one last item here as we get towards the end of the episode. And again, this is something that I never even paid attention to in the past when I've watched this episode, but this time through, we get to the end, there's 4 minutes left in the episode, and you feel like it's over, and then Janeway gets beamed out. And the first thing I thought of this time watching it was, it's like on Enterprise with the Ark with Brent Spiner, where you think everything's over, and the Bird of Prey has exploded, and then suddenly Malik drops down into the corridor to try to kill Dr. Soong one last time, and you're like, do we really need this at the end? And the same situation here. Janeway gets beamed out. Here she is. And then they tell her, you know, Seven has just really, really screwed up the timeline. And we can't send her back. So we need you to go back, retrace all her steps, and clean up all this long list of things that she screwed up. But of course, there's not time left in the episode to do it. So all we do is really see her do like one or two things, and then she's back and everything's there. I don't know if I really have an answer myself how I feel about this, but I wanted to ask you guys, do you feel like this episode would have been better if it had ended without this, or do you think it benefited from having this coda at the end where they go through it one more time just in case your head wasn't spinning enough already from all the temporal incursions?
I feel like if they didn't do that, too many people would be asking the question, why didn't they? I feel like...
That's true.
Because if they have the ability to send somebody back to fix things, because why wouldn't you do that if you screwed up constantly and, you know, like this person was getting, you know, temporal psychosis or whatever, and because they kept sending them back, and then they're like, hey, okay, now that we know how everything plays out, now that we are further along in our timeline, why wouldn't we just send somebody else back because now that we know where it is? And because you know that there'd be so many Star Trek fans who would be sitting at home. We're like, that's stupid. Why didn't they just send one more person back to fix everything and then tie it with a bow? I feel like that's why they did it. I would have liked it if they ended it and maybe just referenced it. But then again, at the same time, when like Char all the time, you know, when they reference something, you say, I want to see it. And so
that's true. I do. Yeah.
I feel like it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't. So I like that they tied it up with a bow. Was it clumsy? Yes. But I thought the alternative was worse.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I think you might be right here. Yeah. I don't know. I might have, in this instance, been happy with them just insinuating what happened and closing off with that. And I would have been okay with it. But yeah, you're right. I always say, I want to see that. I want to see that. But this is the point in the episode, like you mentioned earlier, Chris, where the pacing of the episode really does bother me. Because I'm not realizing until the very end that, oh, wow, yeah, we're going to wrap this up really quick. And yeah, they could have done a little better job of spreading this out a little bit. And maybe the ending feels very rushed. And so, yeah, I feel like they could have done a better job with that.
I do agree that the ending feels rushed. And I do think I'm very much of the opinion, especially as we're sitting here talking about it, that it would have been much better to have a full scene of dialogue and interplay between Janeway and Seven, where it's like, okay, here's what I learned. I used your own thing about, learning to trust and, so in a sense you save the day. Oh yeah. And sort of go back and forth about that and then have just some little bit where it's like, but why didn't they ever send anybody back to clean things up? And then Janeway just saying, they did. I took care of it. Don't worry. And then walk out. And it's like, whoa, hey, wait, what? And then it ends and you're like, oh, that was so neat.
That would have been awesome.
Well, what if, I think
that's
that
a great idea. So what if they say when they're going to beam them back that since all your journeys were to the past, not the future, I don't see any reason to wipe your memory, basically is what he's saying. So when they go back, Janeway and Seven should retain their memories of everything that happened. They could have like a scene at the end where Janeway and Seven together in Janeway's ready room kind of exhale. And it could be like in past tense where in the history books now, Gabriel Bell is actually Sisko. And you could have them kind of, come to terms with what just happened. And Janeway could, turn her display around and just point like, here, afterwards, I went through and I cleaned everything up. So very similar to what you're saying.
I'm glad you brought up past tense because I thought of that episode too with this, because the conclusion of that episode is, yes, they did fix the timeline, but just a little bit off.
Instead of
Gabriel Bell, it's now Ben Sisko, but nobody really knows that. The more you F with time, the more imperfections there are. And it doesn't matter what you do. Just by being there, you screw it up.
Well, I think that speaks to the idea that while individuals are important and individual actions are important, that time flows based on larger events. So the fact that Gabriel Bell is now Benjamin Sisko isn't important. What's important is that the outcome of the Bell riots is what it should have been.
Do you guys think that the universe would have imploded if B'Elanna mentioned Janeway's hair change?
I wish she should have. That was a dead giveaway. I'm like, God, wait a minute. B'Elanna, you're smarter than this. What?
I'm sure she was just like, okay, Captain, we're about to be destroyed. And this is really crazy. Hey, I like your hair. And then she just runs away.
And then the ship blows up.
Boom, end of episode.
Credits.
Great stuff.
Oh, goodness. You guys know the ship blowing up. This is the fifth time on Voyager that Voyager blows up. And it's the eighth time that Janeway dies. So we always talk about Harry Kim dying a lot. This is now fifth season, 24th episode of the fifth season, eighth time Janeway has died on Voyager.
Oh, wow. I had not realized
that. It's a tough road to hoe. That is tough.
So we should not be making fun of Harry. We should be making fun of Janeway.
I think that Janeway has the lead in the who can die the most competition with Harry, actually.
We're going to have to make a tally now.
We need an infographic.
We do. Get on that internet.
Oh, Char can do them. She's done them before for the PDH
model. Awesome. I did the fail-o-meter for Harry Kim.
Yes.
Excellent.
All right. Well, we've been talking about this for an hour. Let's wrap up with our final thoughts and our ratings. So, Tristan, what are your final thoughts on Relativity?
Even though this jumps all over the place and has many incursions, I enjoy it for the reasons that I stated at the beginning about how we journey with Seven and it's not about her humanity. I like the little moments. I like the ping pong match. I love it when we see the Voyager crew do mundane stuff and just hang out together and just be friends. I am a sucker for all that stuff. And I loved it when the ping pong ball started hovering in the air and then it just all of a sudden went, and landed. Yeah. And then Neelix is like, oh, point. Okay.
Exactly.
That was a good thing.
There's
weird
no discussion
about that.
Of how temporal disturbances affect the rules of ping pong.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Neelix is just like, oh, there we go. Business as usual on the Voyager. And I love those little moments. And I love I love time jumps. I love time travel. And I loved the uniforms. I mean, there was just so many things I loved about it that I was able to forget all of the structural problems. So I give this 4 Braxtons out of 5.
Excellent. Nice. What about you, John?
Like I said, it's a fun episode. I think that, yeah, there are flaws with it, but there are flaws with some of my favorite episodes from all of the series. And so, you know, it would be very hypocritical of me to sort of beat up on it too much for that. I do think pacing is an issue. I think that there were some opportunities with how they edited the episode together and the way they told the story that could have been resolved. But, you know, overall, it's an enjoyable romp. I had a good time. So I will give it 7 chronotons out of 10.
Excellent. And Char.
Yeah, I'm with you. It is fun. It definitely does have its problems. It is darn confusing because they are effing with time. And the more you eff with time, the more disturbing it is. I think this episode proves that. But yeah, at the same time, this is a nice 45 minutes of just watching what unfolds. It's not perfect, but it's all right. I think I'm going to give it 3 ensigns out of 5.
All right. Would those be 3 temporally displaced ensigns?
Well, of course. We don't know which time they're from.
That's right. Well, yeah, I agree with you guys. I know I pointed out a lot of different little things about the episode and the pacing and all, but it is a really fun episode to watch. And Tristan, when you said List Your Relativity, I said, yeah, that's a great episode. And I really enjoy watching it despite some of the things here. And most of these things are things that I noticed this time watching it that I've never really paid attention to in the past. And Nick Saban, not Nick Saban, he's the coach of Alabama. Nick
ball.
Sagan, who wrote the episode, who is the son of Carl Sagan, who I think is one of the greatest scientists that ever lived. He said of this episode that I think that might have been the easiest one I worked on, because he worked on 5 episodes of Voyager and 2 episodes of TNG that he wrote. And he said, because the goal is simply to have fun with the others, I felt a lot of different loyalties to character this and character that, but for some reason, this one just came together very quickly. And it was such a joy to write because we were just trying to please ourselves. And I think that comes through in the episode, and that's fine. You know, it's good to have those episodes of Star Trek where you do just have fun. And this was a great 7 story, like you said, Tristan, at the very beginning, because it focuses on 7, but it's not about her trying to become human again. It's just she's one of the characters. So I enjoy the episode very much, actually. And I love the time stuff as well. I love time travel episodes. And I love when we get to see the future time frame and the 29th century technology. And like we said, the uniforms and the comm badges and kind of everything about that. So it was quite a bit of fun. There are, yeah, nitpick things here and there, of course, that I pointed out. And so I'm going to give this episode 6 cases of Albright-Salzman syndrome.
Nice.
All right. Well, before we go, John, tell everyone where they can find you online.
You can find me on Twitter at Kessel Junkie, KESSELJUNKIE. Or you can find me on my own little podcast, Words with Nerds. It's a weekly that publishes every Thursday. You can find us on iTunes or on Podbean.
Do you ever do any time travel themed episodes of Words with Nerds? How would that work?
We haven't hit on that yet, but I have a feeling that I might be bringing this topic to the table sometime soon.
I want to see how you work that out.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And Tristan, where can everyone find you?
You can find me on Twitter as well, at The Insane Robin. And you can also find me on Trek FM's own Voyager podcast, To the Journey.
To the Journey!
To the Journey!
To the Journey.
That was lame. Yeah. Char, of course, was awesome.
Thank you.
Very good. Well, thanks again for joining us today, guys. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. Thank you very much for having
Absolutely. Me. Absolutely. It was good to be back.
Chris, I don't know about you, but I have the worst headache now after talking about relativity. Oh, my goodness.
Me too. You know, the episode itself kind of makes your head spin. It kind of gives you a headache. You understand why. Janeway's feeling bad kind of early in the episode. And of course, she's already been through all this. And as if that weren't enough, that little ludicrous coda at the end really, it's like, hey guys, not feeling sick yet? Here we go. It's like they strap you in. Here goes a roller coaster.
Yeah. Just when you think you're going to be okay, guess what? No, you're not.
Yeah.
You're going to get a hypo, you're going to get some coffee black, and you are going to get over this just like Janeway had to.
You know, we didn't talk about it during the discussion, but I did wonder when Janeway goes in to see the doctor and she's feeling nauseous, do you think she's feeling nauseous just because of the temporal distortions that are starting to pop up around Voyager? Or is she feeling nauseous because she herself has been sent through time by the temporal agents? Ooh. Because if it was, if that were the case, I think that's a brilliant bit of subtle foreshadowing, although I don't think that was actually the case.
There's no real way to know, and that's absolutely brilliant.
Know.
I love it.
Yeah. So I'm going to pretend that that's what they were doing anyway, because it makes the episode better for me.
Yeah, yeah. That's going into my canon, too. I like it.
All right. Well, as much fun as it was talking about relativity, and of course having John on the show again, who, as I said, is moving in. He's actually here sleeping in the corner of the Trek FM studio so that he can be on all the shows
leave.
Now. As much fun as this was, it's not the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this past week. So here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
The unmade Starfleet Academy movie.
You know, even on paper. Okay, do we want to do the script which was written by the guy who wrote Star Trek V, or do we want to do the script which was written by the guy who wrote Star Trek II?
Earl Grey.
The ships of TNG.
Oh no, it's one ship that splits into three parts, just like the D is one ship that splits into two parts. It's not a Voltron, it's one ship.
An owl formed the saucer.
The orb.
Dr. Bashir, I presume commentary.
I know that.
It's just a hostile.
The look on Sisko's face the whole time, he's just looking at Zimmerman like, all right, you're a piece of work, aren't you?
Exactly.
To the journey!
Sisko.
And obviously, Sisko couldn't let go.
No.
And she proved that by having his child against his will.
Yeah. Now, here is the Maury Show twist of the future. He does not impregnate her. She impregnates herself with his DNA, or so she thought. But he is not the father.
The ready room.
The ship. But it's also really gloomy, and it's sad. I never want to go back there. I don't want to, like, re-experience that. Like, just the visual candy of being able to go outside and talk to the Vorta and... Wow, I maybe didn't phrase that properly. I meant the change in color and lighting.
Oh.
I did not mean, but she's a very
I thought you were
Vorta.
Talking about Kimana.
She is fetching. No. She's a fetching lass.
Warp 5.
Zindi Evolution.
Well, I think maybe Okapa and Insectoid are two races that could have a life together. You know, you've got the 9-year lifespan of the Okapa. You've got the 12-year lifespan of an Insectoid. If they meet at the right time, it could be a beautiful love story.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Iris Stephen Bear's Star Trek.
And it's the first time I heard him say something that he said several times over the years is, you know, one day when we're not the middle child, we're not the stepchild, people are going to go, holy crap, look at DS9.
Literary Treks.
Slings and Arrows, A Sea of Troubles.
You see in this book, too, that Picard is facing this melancholy because they've been worried about the Borg, and now the Dominion is on the horizon, and there's these two things, and obviously this is before First Contact, so that hasn't happened yet. And Picard seems to be kind of weighed down in this story in some ways.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and get your daily Trek Talk fix. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week, and some days we even have two shows for you, and you'll find them in a variety of places, including iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune. I think even on the little mobile emitters from the 29th century, I think you can tune in that way. So check them all out.
You can get us anywhere.
And find out what we're talking about related to your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe.
I heard something, Chris. I heard that if you're wearing your mobile emitter and you do a barrel roll, you get the latest episode of The Ready Room right there.
Do a barrel roll. The barrel roll, press E or R,
you get it like a week early, right?
Well, maybe. Now that we've distorted time so much, they're probably going to come in out of order. Yeah, who knows? Who knows? Anything goes at this point.
You're going to be listening to like bits of the Ready Room 123, bits of the Ready Room 65. You never know.
Right. Yeah. Then you're going to leak in a little bit of Ready Room 69. Then you're going to go back to this episode and it's going to make you nauseous and you're going to have to lay down and write it out.
Yeah, it will make your head spin.
What do you do?
Right, well,
what do you do?
If you want to share your thoughts on relativity or anything else we talked about today, there are a variety of ways you can do that. The first way is to go to trek.film/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the Ready Room, and that will come to us by email. You can also send us a voicemail through the website, or you can go to the forums at trek.film/forums and talk to us and other listeners about the show and anything about Star Trek you want to discuss. And in social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And on Twitter, you'll find us tweeting away about Star Trek all the time under username trekfm. And also, speaking of the contact form, I would like to remind everyone about questions from the fleet. If there's any question you have about Star Trek, anything you want us to discuss and share our thoughts on here on the Ready Room, go to trek.fm/contact and choose questions from the fleet on that form. Send us your question and we will discuss it during the news segment of the Ready Room. So we'd love to hear from you and find out what you want to know about Star Trek or what you want to know our thoughts on. All right, Char, what if people want to find you, you know, when you're not dressing up in your science blue uniform, trying on your one ensign pip, because that's how it's done. Where can people find out more about what you have going on?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. My username is OTheProfanity, and sometimes there are profanity-laden tweets, just to forewarn you. Just depends on how the day is going. but you can also catch me elsewhere on Trek FM with our other panelist for the night, Tristan, who co-hosts To the Journey with me.
To the Journey!
To the Journey! To the Journey. Yes. So you can find us there, and we discuss Voyager all the time, every week. New episodes come at you on Thursday.
Definitely. Yeah, I hear a lot of people talking about To the Journey. I hear a lot of fans who are not necessarily Voyager fans who say that you guys are turning them towards Voyager. So,
yeah, apparently this is a thing. A lot of our iTunes reviews have said this too, and we're thrilled by that. That's absolutely awesome.
Yeah, it really is. So you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. I don't have any profane tweets on my account, though. I leave that to Char.
Yet.
She takes care of it for me.
Yeah. That is kind of my domain, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So, but you can find me there. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username, as well as on my personal website at cbrianjones.com, where I have started up a DS9 rewatch. I'm going to be writing a little bit about each episode as I go along, just share my thoughts on it. It's nothing overly complex. The purpose of the rewatch is just to refresh my memory on everything and look for topics for The Orb, which is another show you can find me on, which nice. I do with Matthew Rushing. And we do that every week, and we talk exclusively about Deep Space Nine. And Matthew and I also do Literary Treks, where we talk about Star Trek books and comics and interview authors. You'll find me on Warp 5, where we talk exclusively about Enterprise. And you'll also find me on Matterstream, which is my interview show where I talk to actors and writers and creatives and scientists and all sorts of people about topics loosely related to Star Trek or inspired by Star Trek. So a lot of different places that you can find me if you'd like to tune into those.
You're everywhere.
Yeah, I seem to be everywhere. All right. And not because I'm being sent through time over and over.
You're not Jeffrey Combs either, somehow.
He is everywhere.
Somehow I'm not, but I wish I were because he's far more talented than I am. I don't mind being Jeffrey Combs.
Oh, I think you're the Jeffrey Combs of podcasting. How about that?
I don't know. Maybe. All right. Well, before we go, Char, we'd like to ask everyone once again to please support our sponsors for today's show. Your support of our sponsors is very important for making it possible for us to bring the Ready Room and all of our shows to you every week. First, there's Squarespace, the web's best hosting and CMS that makes it simple for you to create a beautiful blog, website, portfolio, or as we discussed in the news segment, an online store. Create your own space today by going to squarespace.com for your free 14-day trial, and then use offer code TREK12 to save 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, and choose the annual plan when you sign up, because if you do that, you'll get a free custom domain registration as well. So again, that's at squarespace.com, offer code TREK12, and we really thank Squarespace for their support of the Ready Room. Also, there's audible.com. As we discussed, you can go over there and get Mosaic by Jerry Taylor, narrated by Kate Mulgrew, absolutely free just by trying Audible. And to do that, you go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up. And, you know, if Mosaic isn't the book that you want, you can get Star Trek Memories, Star Trek Movie Memories, or you can get any of countless new releases, bestsellers, classic books, Star Trek books. They have over 150,000 titles on the site right now, and they're adding new titles every week. I know it's amazing how much stuff they're adding on there. So go check it out. I promise you're going to love Audible. If you love podcasts, you're going to love Audible. So audibletrial.com/trekfm, and that really helps us bring the shows to you every week as well, and we really thank Audible for their support of the network. Lastly, there is one more way you can directly help us keep the Ready Room coming to you, and that's by getting some aliens in your life. These are original illustrations by Toba Ushi, who does most of the artwork that you see on our website. We have 8 different aliens for you to choose from, and we have them as badges and art prints, and you can mix and match, choose which ones you want in which format. And maybe, Char, we should do random alien who could have been the saboteur instead of Braxton. I don't know what that's going to look like, but maybe I can ask Isaac to brainstorm on it.
Toba Ushi can come up with something.
Yeah, I think so. So anyway, you can get these yourself by going to trek.fm/donate. We have different levels of contributions that you can choose from, and your donations help us pay for the cost of production, hosting, and bandwidth that's needed to bring the show to you each week. And we really thank you for helping us keep the network going.
Indeed. It costs money to make this thing.
It does cost money to make all these shows. It costs quite a bit of money, in fact. So we really thank you for your support. All right, Char. Well, I'm going to wander off. You know, it's good that they sent Janeway back through time to clean up after Seven. But when Braxton said that Janeway is kind of a mess and you need to stay away from her, he wasn't kidding. She left her own mess. Now it's up to me to go clean it up.
Wow. Okay. Well, good luck with that. I think you have a challenge ahead of you, and I think it's time to stick a ping pong ball in it, because this Ready Room is done.
Recording.
Boom. Neelix's ping pong rules.
I'm glad Tristan brought that up.
Maybe.
That is exactly what I thought too when that ping pong ball started moving again and Neelix was like, okay. And I'm thinking, you know, nothing seems strange to these guys. It's too bad they weren't having a spaghetti fight though, and the spaghetti just froze in midair.
Oh, that would have been perfect, right?
Yeah.
Oh, what a missed opportunity. Now, they should have had some sort of cut to the parturition time. I mean, they were in season 2 anyway. Why couldn't they do this? Oh, man.
And then they thought that everything was okay. And then it starts moving again. It's splat all over them.
Yeah. It makes even more of a mess because it kind of like paused midair.
Yeah.
And the collision is just that much worse. And
well, you know,
someone's got to clean up the mess hall.
You know, some pieces of pasta would be moving faster than other pieces of pasta.
Yeah. We don't know. Oh, man. It's just going to go all over the place.
And the sauce would already be spoiled. It would have mold spores on it because of the time discrepancy.
Gross.
It actually had already spoiled. It was from like 7 days in the future.
So not only is it pasta spilling everywhere, but it's got green sauce because it's got mold on it.
Right. Yeah.
Ew. Oh, okay. Now this is just getting kind of sick.
Yeah, maybe we should move on.
Good eating at Neelix's. Yeah.